Midtown got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bums, 42nd Street got Big Jim Walker, he a bull shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country horse. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Boss just because. And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim. I don't do that.
Yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it is a Tuesday, and we're here until 4 o'clock. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you want to jump in at any time. Classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can watch on Antenna TV every night. David Brenner from 1983. We're going to talk about Michael Bolton, who tried out for Black Sabbath, evidently. Max von Sydow passed away. We're going to talk about him and remember him. We're going to talk about some lineup changes in music. And speaking of music, Tom, did you play that because of our guest?
That is correct.
Okay. Well, our guest is Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
How you doing?
Big and dumb as a man can come.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank
there
you, Tom.
It is. That's right.
My hands are clean. I'm feeling good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm good. Jim Ryan, music entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You did some traffic, too. You were a traffic dude.
I did once upon a time.
Yeah.
15 years of it.
I remember you were on my show several times doing the traffic.
The first time I was on your show, yeah.
Yeah. Was that when
filling in for Esmeralda.
Filling in for Esmeralda Leon. There it is. Well, Jim is also a music writer and entertainment writer. And Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now, and you have a website?
RadioJimRyan.com, and it's all on Twitter, at Radio Jim Ryan.
All available on Twitter, at Radio Jim Ryan. Jim comes in to talk about some of the concerts that you've seen and some of the things that you write about in entertainment in general. The first thing I would like to talk to you about is you went to the AEW.
Yes.
The Revolution pay-per-view.
Posting my piece on that later today.
Oh, you are? Okay, so where was this?
So this was at Wintrust Arena, new arena in the South Loop, first wrestling event I believe they've held there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all kind of done in conjunction with C2E2 throughout the weekend. They had They had kind of co-branded that. It was getting mentioned on all of the Dynamite broadcasts. I think the logo was on one of the turnbuckles. So there was a strong AEW presence throughout the weekend at McCormick Place as well during C2E2. So it was cool. It was different.
AEW, for people who might not know, is a relatively new wrestling organization that is competing on Wednesday nights with NXT.
Right.
On TV. So it's like now they're you know, we used to have the Monday Night Wars.
Right.
When it was between Nitro and Raw. And now it's the Wednesday Night Wars between NXT and AEW. And AEW seems to be winning.
They have won most of the ratings battles so far, not by a huge margin, but they have won.
And the big face of AEW is Chris Jericho,
right?
So this was their first pay per view in Chicago.
It was their first one at Wintrust Arena. They've kind of had Chicago's been pretty much their main presence so far since starting. They incorporated as AEW in January of 2019, so a little over a year. And the Dynamite television broadcast started in October on TNT, so that's the Wednesday night show now. But their first event prior to the AEW kind of grew out of an event at Sears Center in Hoffman Estates, I think in like 2018, called All In.
Mm.
Then there was a follow-up All Out about a year later.
Right.
And that was Jericho, Kenny Omega, who I think wrestled a lot in New Japan. And then Cody Rhodes, who came over from WWE, and independent tag team, the Young Bucks.
Yeah, and that's
kind of all started it.
That's all started it. And how was the show?
It was fantastic. All the shows they've done in Chicago, they've done All In and All Out at Sears Center. They've done Dynamite episodes at Sears Center. They did one in Champaign, Chicago. I interviewed Jim Ross, and that was kind of one of the biggest parts of what we talked about was why Chicago, right? Because so much of what they do is embracing nostalgia, and a lot of that kind of points back toward WCW. They're involving some of the old Four Horsemen guys. Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard have a significant role. But Chicago, what Jim Ross and I spoke about was that history of wrestling in Chicago that kind of sets the table so nicely for AEW to have such a significant presence here and probably its biggest major market.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Chicago's a big wrestling town.
Yeah. And always
always has been. People like wrestling in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I'm one of them. I've been watching wrestling my whole life.
I grew up in these stories of all of the old guys, Gorgeous George and whatnot at like the International Amphitheater.
Yeah.
And then as a kid, my Uncle Tom would take me to Rosemont for the Hulkster.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan versus Kamala. We saw the best one was Hogan versus Savage with Mr. T as special guest referee.
Of course. Of course.
Phenomenal.
Classic. Well, I mean, going back just locally here in Chicago, we had Bob Luce wrestling.
Right.
Which was legendary.
Mm-hmm.
Ben's Auto Sales was the sponsor.
I've seen the videos on YouTube.
And it's fantastic. And I used to watch it every week. Locally we had some pretty amazing wrestlers in this town. So the history with it is pretty big.
One of the greatest feuds of all time is widely considered to be Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. And
yeah.
A couple of those matches happened here. One of them in 94 was at Allstate Arena,
mm-hmm.
part of, I think it was Spring Stampede. But there's quite a history in Chicago. Jim Ross actually talked about, you'll appreciate this, his history working with Jack Brickhouse in WCW in the 90s. Brickhouse would do local spots just for Chicago, and he would do them with either Jim Ross or Tony Schiavone, where he would just talk wrestling.
I did not know that.
So I didn't either. And then I looked it up. It was called WCW Pro, and it was in like 1993. It was actually that late.
At Brickhouse?
Brickhouse did it only for two markets. They did a Chicago specific segment in this broadcast, and that was Brickhouse. And they did one in New York too. I don't remember who did that. But
wow.
Brickhouse would actually do a segment every week on this show for like a year and a half with Jim Ross. And he spoke of that as like one of the highlights of his career working with
Jack Brickhouse.
Getting stories about everything from Jack Brickhouse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
It was pretty good.
Pretty cool. All right, well, we'll talk about the AEW a little bit more about the show. Jim Ryan is here, music entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. Lots of music to talk about and stuff that he's written. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio show continues. Nick DiGilio show continues here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number if you would like to join us. Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him at radio. Jim Ryan is here. You were at the AEW pay-per-view, wrestling pay-per-view.
Revolution.
Revolution was the name of it. And what were some of the matches?
The World Heavyweight Championship title bout was your reigning champion Chris Jericho against mm-hmm. John Moxley. I feel like we can spoil that now that it's almost 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
So Moxley is your new champion.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember him from WWE as Dean Ambrose,
he was
Shield.
Dean Ambrose. Yeah. Yep.
So he's kind of your big, I guess your big face now, the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
The whole card was fantastic. The best match on the bill, though, was the Young Bucks versus Kenny Omega and Hangman Page.
Oh, sure.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I had, they sat us ringside for this.
That's cool.
I mean, there were four rows on the floor in front of us. It was like, I haven't had seats like that in a long, since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I forgot how much fun that, whether you're a fan of wrestling or not,
yeah.
to watch some of the, how acrobatic these guys are now, what athletes they are, that
yeah.
close is
it's pretty
really
cool.
something.
I've only had, like, ringside seats once.
I had it once when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Once, a friend of mine once, she knew Bradshaw, and we had tickets for a house show. We were close.
Oh, okay.
But this was, for the whole production, too, for the pay-per-view, it was crazy.
That's pretty cool. Well, so, and they're doing well? The product is good?
Yeah, it seems so. They just got extended, a 3-year extension on TNT for the Wednesday Night Dynamite broadcast. So, I mean, they're certainly, I mean, there's a ton of money behind it. This was kind of how I was able to spin it for Forbes, because Tony Khan is the president of it, and he's got an ownership stake, I think, in the in a soccer team, in a Premier League soccer team. I think an ownership stake in the one of the NFL teams down in Florida.
Yeah.
I think the Panthers.
Yeah. Sold out, the event?
It was sold out, yeah. And then they started opening up seats, some of the obstructed view seats and stuff, too. There was enough demand for that the day of the show. So it was. I also spoke with MJF at C2E2, who's the main heel, the bad guy.
Right.
Did you see some of the stories that came out about him that weekend?
No.
He got in trouble. He was trending. I'm like, why is MJF trending? This can't be a good thing. He very religiously observes kayfabe. He will not break character. He did the media rounds on Friday morning, going into that weekend for C2E2 and for the pay per view Saturday, and wouldn't break character. Now I had prepped enough that I knew that was coming, so I kind of played along with it. But he was caught on camera giving a 7-year-old the finger.
I saw that. I did see that picture. Yeah.
They say there's no such thing as bad PR, right? But I mean, I'm like, wow, because nobody knows who MJF is from AEW. Why is he trending?
Yeah,
and that was why.
And that's why, because he flipped off a 7-year-old.
So I had asked him. I said, have you been down yet on the convention floor? What do you think of the comic fans who are in attendance this weekend? And you can imagine how he took that question.
Yeah.
And ran with it. Had some choice words for some of the people in attendance.
Yeah, that's funny. No, I did see the picture. I didn't put it together right away.
That was at C2E2.
Oh, that's funny.
So the article I'm going to post later today is kind of funny, because it's got Jim Ross talking, you know, about this connection between wrestling and Chicago. I have some quotes from Tony Khan, who's the president, and the money behind it. Cody Rhodes was on a panel on Friday at C2E2, and I have some great quotes from him. But MJF is in there in full heel character.
All right. Well, we'll look for that. You're gonna post that later.
That'll be later today, yeah.
Okay, cool. Now, speaking of C2E2, Shatner.
I love that man.
What is there not to love about Shatner?
He turns 89 next week.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
89. Man, oh man, he colors his hair.
He still has it, though.
He still has it, though. He's right. Man, Shatner, 89.
Uh-huh.
And he still keeps busy constantly.
And he's so sharp, Nick. That's what blew me away. Like, we talk about these kind of one-man shows, and that's what his appearance pretty much was at C2E2. The host came out to introduce him and then left, and he did the whole thing. It was the worst part of some of these C2E2 panels, right, or any of these panels, is when you get audience Q&A to me.
I agree.
Listen,
I do it.
Right?
I host many of these things at the Flashback Horror Convention.
And they can be bad.
Yes.
Drag the whole thing to a halt. Fanboy moments. Bad questions.
Yep.
He understands that and turns the whole idea on its head. He's giving the fans a hard time. Someone asked him what's his favorite episode of Star Trek, and he just goes crazy. He's like, come on, man. I've been asked that question.
Yeah.
And like, so he kind of makes sport of the whole idea of it, but he gets just enough from those moments to go off and running on like a 20-minute tangent story, and it was hilarious.
Well, you know, he's done that. He's such a pro at that. And that, you know, you talk any of this, I always go back to the sketch from Saturday Night Live. Do you remember the sketch that he did?
Which one?
Seriously?
No.
Tom, see if you can find the audio. It takes place at a Star Trek convention. And he's on stage and starts making fun of the Star Trek. It's like,
I mean, he kind of did this.
It's like move out of your mom's basement, that kind of thing.
Stuff he's saying. It was beautiful.
Yeah, but this is like, this goes back to a sketch that he did like in 91 on SNL. And like Lovitz had the Spock ears on, and he's got the Star Trek shirt, and all the nerds are out there, and it's just him on stage railing on these guys. And he caught hell for it back in the day.
Now he can get away with it.
Yeah.
He gets away with it now in like a way like Don Rickles could make all those same jokes too, that
absolutely
everyone else would get roasted for.
Absolutely.
But he's kind of grandfathered in.
But the thing is, like, when that sketch, because that was in 1991. He did that sketch in 91, and that was, you know, and the Star Trek fans were furious. They were furious.
See, I love this.
He caught so much hell for doing the sketch. Tom, is it out there anywhere in the ether?
It's a little bit difficult to track down, but I'll see what I can
see
do.
If you can find
that old SNL stuff.
It's the SNL. It was from 1991, Shatner was the host, and it was a sketch that took place at a Star Trek convention where he was doing a Q&A and he just went off.
And that's beautiful.
It's absolutely hilarious. I remember, you know, watching it live and like, oh, like, why don't you get a life? You know, he's doing that.
This is what he was doing in C2E2.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Did you ever kiss a girl?
This is the stuff he was saying.
What is the name of his book?
Yeah.
He's got a book called Get a Life.
Yeah. Yeah. But awesome. It's a legendary sketch. But like, I guess he's taking that now on the road.
Yeah, he's doing I'm amazed how much he travels. So, I mean, he talked about how he's a little nervous at 89 to be doing this much travel. He's heading to go do a European tour of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, where I guess he just, you know, does an audience Q&A following a screening
of Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
he's trying to sell. He had just gotten here, I think he said, from Toronto. And he went to Chicago, and then he was immediately, I think, starting this tour in Scotland. Like, his tour, I looked on his touring schedule is crazy, at 89 especially.
Yeah.
He's trying to sell a documentary he started filming in Chicago called The Ride. I guess he rides a custom motorcycle along Route 66 from Chicago to L.A. Filmed a documentary about it, and he's trying to sell it now. It's done.
Oh, my God.
Right.
That's amazing.
He talked about another one he did here. He talked about Splat Attack, the paintball documentary he did in Joliet.
Okay. I didn't know about that. Did you find the sketch? This is a sketch from 1991. Listen to this.
The man you've all been waiting for. This is his first Star Trek convention in quite a long time.
Oh,
I know he's
Phil Hartman.
Thrilled to be here. Captain James Tiberius Kirk himself. Now, Bill's here to field a few questions, so just fire away.
No. Mr. Shatner, go ahead. Mr. Shatner.
All right, the first question.
Okay, when you were in a beam down on the planet, okay, for the last time in episode 25, uh-huh. I was wondering, like, what was going on with the crew in that particular...
Episode 25?
Yeah.
You got to give me a plot, see, because it's 20 years and it's a long time.
Oh,
plot.
Episode 25, that's where you and the crew of the Enterprise got attacked by these spores and started acting real weird, like hippies and stuff.
Right, I remember. Okay, what's your question?
Well, I wonder if you could settle a bet for me and my friends,
sure.
Okay? Like, when you left your quarters for the last time and you opened up your safe, what was the combination?
I don't know. I mean, it's been a long time. I don't know that.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Anybody? Oh, all right. Go ahead. You. Go ahead. You in the funny shirt.
Okay. Okay. Another bet.
Uh huh.
Okay. On your horse farm, all right, how many saddlebred horses do you have?
34.
Wait. Is that including the colt that was born earlier this week?
That mare had a foal?
Tuesday.
Well, I guess it's 35 then.
All right.
You know, before I answer any more questions, there's something I wanted to say. I having received all your letters over the years, and I've spoken to many of you, and some of you have traveled, you know, hundreds of miles to be here, I'd just like to say, get a life, will you, people? For crying out loud, it's just a TV show. I mean, look at you. Look at the way you're dressed. You've turned an enjoyable little job that I did as a lark for a few years into a colossal waste of time.
It goes on. He says, "Did you ever kiss a girl?" And but yeah, that was from 86. Actually, I got the year wrong. So 1986.
When did Star Trek go? When were the final episodes?
It was in the late 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, well, obviously, it was in syndication forever.
Right, forever.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was. I think it ran. I know it ran from the. I think it was like from. What did it run? It was supposed to run 5 years. It was a 5 year mission.
Okay. Yeah.
It only ran 3 seasons. Right. So from like 66 to 69.
Yeah, it's 79
like
episodes. I know that.
Yeah. So it was supposed to, but it was a five-year mission, and they never finished.
didn't quite get there.
Yeah, 66 to 69.
66 to 69.
He was in the news this week for his horses. Did you see that story?
No.
His divorce settlement became public this week. And so him and his now ex-wife had to split the horses and the horse farm. But Bill is maintaining ownership of something that will create future generations of horses.
Oh, right.
The DNA.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
So there you go.
That was mentioned earlier, I believe. Yeah. All right. Jim Ryan is with us. More C2E2 stuff. You wrote about that. Mark Ruffalo and all kinds of cool stuff. And William Shatner just basically stole C2E2.
He was the best.
All right. Jim Ryan is with us. Music entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. We'll play a little music trivia as well. Rock of Ages. Coming up. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN. God, I haven't heard this song in years. Sky High. Who is this?
Jigsaw,
that's right. Wow. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. The show continues here for a Tuesday morning. We've got some classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson Show, David Brenner from 1983. Michael Bolton apparently tried out for Black Sabbath. We're definitely going to discuss that. Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, and Chicago Now, joins us usually once a month. We're going to play a little music trivia, Rock of Ages.
You'll be very excited, by the way, Nick, to know that I'm interviewing Joe Elliott Thursday.
Oh, you are?
Speaking of Rock of Ages. Yes.
Wow.
They have a live album coming out.
They do?
Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, of course. So we've been talking about, what else did you see besides Shatner stealing C2E2?
Let's see. Friday was the C2E2 panel, and that was very entertaining. Saturday was Adam Savage from Mythbusters.
Yeah.
Who had a standing room only giant overflow crowd out into the lobby where screens were set up for people to watch the streaming of what was going on in the other room. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that Adam Savage had this kind of cult following. It was one of the biggest lines I saw all weekend.
Mythbusters is huge, man.
Right.
It's huge. And it's just because they blow stuff up.
Right. That,
I mean, like every episode, they just like, okay,
yes.
My favorite Mythbusters episode happened during Shark Week.
Okay.
Years ago, where they took everything that happened in Jaws to see if it really would happen that way.
Okay.
So they actually did put a tank in a fake shark's mouth.
Okay.
And then shoot it with a rifle, and it did not explode.
I'm shocked.
It did not explode. You know,
but then did they make it explode?
Of course they did.
Okay.
I mean, if it doesn't blow up, they figure out
how to make it.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I'm not surprised that Adam Savage had a
crazy
huge crowd.
And then he had actually, before his panel, walked the convention floor in full custom-made costume as Captain America. He actually went out. He was a man of the people.
Yeah.
He was encouraging the cosplay and literally walked the walk.
When you go to stuff like, see, because, you know, I've said this a million times, that Flashback Weekend is one of the only conventions that I ever go to because I'm a host. I'm one of the hosts there. So I stay all weekend, and it's a horror convention. It's mostly horror. It's not as huge as C2E2, although we moved now.
I was going to say, it's coming up too, right?
It's August.
Okay.
We've moved now. We used to be at the Crown Plaza. We're now at the Hyatt.
Okay.
Rosemont. And,
nice.
And that's a huge.
Oh yeah. So you're okay. Yeah, you're right next to the convention center. Okay.
You know, it's expanded big. I mean, and to the point now they're actually going to have a room with horror themed auto show.
Oh, that's awesome. I started seeing the ads this week on Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have the maximum, what's the hell the name of that terrible Stephen King movie with Emilio Estevez?
Maximum Overdrive.
Right, Maximum Overdrive. They're going to have the goblin,
yes.
The goblin truck is going to be there. They've got the Haddonfield, the Haddonfield official car from Halloween,
okay.
The original Halloween. They've got all these crazy cars are going to be there. I think Christine is going to be there.
Wow.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so they've added that. So it's gotten big, but the C2E2 is massive.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And it's McCormick Place.
McCormick Place, yeah. And then, like I say, spilled over to Wintrust for the wrestling.
Yeah.
It's
nuts.
It's a crazy amount of people.
Now, Mark Ruffalo, did you get to talk to him?
No, I didn't talk to him, but I caught his panel. And he was, I know some of the films he's been in. I know The Incredible Hulk. I know Eternal Sunshine. But I didn't know much about him. And that was really interesting. I had no idea he was such an activist and a philanthropist.
Yeah.
And he spoke very eloquently about that stuff without getting real political, just kind of a concern for his fellow man.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of beautiful, actually. I think I closed my article with his quote because it was great.
I think, what's the quote?
That the world needs more, you know, compassion and concern for one another. A little empathy goes a long way.
I love Mark Ruffalo. I just think he's great. I think he's great in everything. He the first time I remember seeing Mark Ruffalo was in a movie called You Can Count on Me with Laura Linney.
Okay.
And the first time I ever saw the guy, I was like, who is this guy?
Wow.
You Can Count on Me, great movie. And I don't know if – I think it's his first movie. I'm pretty sure it was his first movie. And he was amazing in it. He was amazing in it. And I've loved him ever since.
He talked about the amount of improv that went on the set of
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that there was a ton of improv that they really.
Is that right?
He said that they never stopped rolling. Like he said, even during like breaks on set, if they'd be eating lunch, the cameras would roll at all times, and that
wow,
that almost the majority of that movie is improv.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. Which I never.
I had no idea. I've seen that movie 900 times. I've never. Wow,
that's what he said.
Wow, that's amazing.
So a lot of what you see in there was just off-camera stuff they happened to capture.
Right.
It wasn't even scripted moments.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, I think I appreciate the movie even more than I already did.
That was kind of my takeaway.
Yeah. Jim Ryan is here. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing music and entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, and Chicago Now. So did you have a good time at C2E2?
I love it. It's one of those rare places. I mean, it's... Everyone goes out of their way to be accepting of other people. You know, that's, I think conventions like that go a long way toward helping people to embrace things that look or sound or feel or act different, right?
Yeah.
People dressing up in this cosplay would probably get ridiculed anywhere else that weekend outside McCormick Place.
Yeah.
But there, it's a really inviting, accepting atmosphere, and I think that's beautiful.
That's the thing that I love about Flashback is that I'm a horror geek.
Okay.
I'm a dork when it comes to horror. And that's my brethren, man.
Sure.
That's it. That's the weekend when we're all, like, comfortable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a wonderful thing.
It's absolutely awesome. We can embrace our dorkiness and our love for horror, and no one's going to judge us.
Right.
You can dress how you want to dress. You can wear a stupid costume. You could spend a bunch of money on a bunch of crap that people would make fun of for you, you know, for buying.
Yes.
And nobody judges anybody. It's just, it's like, yeah, you know what? You're a horror dork. I'm a horror dork. And we're spending the weekend together.
That's, there's so many, you know, negatives of the internet, but I think one of the positives is that it's really, is there any such thing anymore as like, you know, a nerdy culty thing? Like the internet has united all of these crowds.
You can
find like-minded people no matter how, you know, quote unquote strange, you know, whatever you're into might be.
I know this probably sounds really corny, but I love the Flashback weekend.
Yeah.
I adore it.
I get that.
I feel good.
That's how I feel the whole weekend at C2E2.
Yeah. It's probably true for C2E2 too, but you know, I'm such an integral part of the Flashback weekend because I host it.
Right.
And I've been part of it for since the first one. And then you see the same people every year. There are lots of people who come every year, and we all just like that's the one time when we all see each other is that first weekend in August, and we all just bond. Tom went this year this past year for the first time. He's going to be out of town though for this one.
I know, and I'm really sad because I can't remember. Is it Jeanette Goldstein?
Yeah, she's going to be there. Yeah, Vasquez from Aliens is going to be there.
I got to get all my Alien people, you know.
Yeah,
that's like my thing. But
Shawnee Smith,
yeah,
and Tobin Bell from the Saw movies.
Okay,
they're going to be there. The lineup they slowly release the whole lineup.
Right.
I mean, the event doesn't happen until August. But I know exactly what you mean about going to C2E2 and having that vibe. It's just this wow. Look,
yep.
Everybody is there's no judgment. Everybody, if you want to dress like an idiot, dress like an idiot. you know, embrace your dorkiness.
Yeah,
man.
That's really it.
That's it. And I love that. I love that.
When I was a kid, it was so not cool to be a wrestling fan. So it's hilarious to go to something like this at 40.
Yeah.
Where it's totally embraced.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yet wrestling went through a period where it wasn't, you know, it was dorky and it wasn't popular.
Right, yeah.
But it's not now, please. I mean, yeah, everybody.
Since the Attitude Era, yeah, it's kind of crossed
everybody
over.
Everybody loves wrestling, man.
I know, The Rock and Cena. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Everyone knows who they are.
And the Rock is like the highest paid movie star in the world.
It's insane.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
I mean,
and still comes back to do this stuff. That's what I love.
He comes back for WrestleMania.
Right.
Let's not go nuts.
But he gets his fix. He still enjoys
it. No, absolutely. And he still sells it, too, man. And the pop he gets is insane. I mean, well, it makes sense. He's the
Rock.
Like,
spans generations now, too.
Yeah. Stone Cold, another one, man.
Stone Cold, for sure.
The pop that guy gets when he walks into an auditorium, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I love wrestling. I don't care. I don't either. I love it. I don't care. So C2E2 was fun then, huh?
It was a blast.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. All right, we got more stuff to talk about here. Concerts that you've seen, stuff that you've written. We're going to play a little music trivia as well. And at any time you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And the Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on WGN. It's the Greg Allman version, not the Allman Brothers version. I prefer this version, actually.
Greg's pretty great.
He is. He is. Let me show you my tattoo.
He's no angel.
He's no angel. Let me show you my tattoo. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio. That reminds me, you know, that song always reminds me of a sketch they did on Saturday Night Live where Amy Poehler was very pregnant.
Okay.
Like, very, very pregnant. And Josh Brolin was the host, and he had a mullet and a mustache, and they were in, like, a dive bar, and that song came on, and she did, like, a seductive dance. I mean, like, she was, like, 9 months pregnant. She was huge. And she was, like, seducing Josh Brolin to that song.
Nice.
To I'm No Angel. So, by the way, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Nick DiGilio here, 720 WGN. Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. We were talking about the AEW event.
Yeah.
The wrestling event that you went to and the C2E2. You had a good time over at C2E2. Let's talk about Chris and Rich Robinson.
Oh, my God.
At Lincoln Hall. Now, it's interesting because I never thought that we would see these two guys. These are the guys, the brother team from the Black Crowes.
Right.
Who have notoriously hated each other.
Right.
And had many, many battles and conflicts over the years. But they actually came together and they did a tour. By the way, one of my favorite tours of all time was called the Brotherly Love Tour.
Yeah, I saw this in Tinley Park.
Yeah, and it was
Space Hog.
It wasn't Oasis.
Oasis.
It was Oasis. The
Space Hog was the
Space
opener.
Hog. Black Crowes.
And Black Crowes. Yeah.
Right. Brotherly Love Tour.
Right. Or lack thereof.
Or lack thereof. All right. Well, what about Chris and Rich Robinson? First of all, Lincoln Hall is an awesome, awesome venue to see anything.
So capacity 500 to see this show, right? So it's, I mean, beyond intimate. They've got the amphitheater tour this summer as the Black Crowes, and I think what this tour pretty much is, them performing as an acoustic duo in these tiny rooms, is to show people what's in store for this summer, because the early word on that tour wasn't good. It looked like a cash grab. They didn't bring back any original members.
Right.
It's too expensive. It didn't look good. So this is a commercial for that. And then Chris goes out every night as the tour started and yelled at the crowd and complained at the crowd for talking during the acoustic set. Not that he's wrong.
Yeah.
But it didn't help. It's, yeah. But he was actually complimentary of the crowd in Chicago. He thanked us for being respectful, even though the guy next to me kept yelling, "Let's go Cubs."
What?
Kept yelling, "Let's go Cubbies."
Why? He's at a Black Crow show.
He may have been overserved.
Oh, well, he may have. Wait a minute. A Cub fan was drinking?
At a concert, I know.
Wait, hold on a second. A Cub fan drinking?
Slander and lies.
Oh, I don't buy that at all.
I know. I don't mean to speak ill.
It's insane. I don't believe it. I don't believe that a Cub fan was drinking.
But it was so funny because every time this would happen, everyone was like on pins and needles waiting, like, all right, is Chris about to lose it?
Is he going
to
go nuts?
And he never did. But I got to say, if
maybe he's a Cub fan.
Maybe. if anyone's wondering what that band sounds like in 2020, everyone's complaining they didn't bring back any original members, which is hilarious to me because from day one, the Black Crowes had 6 million people in the band. Like, who do you want them to? What's your nostalgic moment there?
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as them being the creative engine that drives that band, they've never sounded better to me.
That's awesome.
That show at Lincoln Hall was so good.
Yeah.
They brought Peter Buck out the other night in L.A. and covered an old R.E.M. song.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's find the videos on YouTube. If you're wondering what they sound like, if you're wondering whether it's worth buying a ticket for Tinley Park this summer, the answer is yes.
Who are they touring with?
They haven't announced anyone else yet.
Oh, it's just
so everything about this looks like a cash grab. They didn't bring back any original members. They're playing the first album in full, which is great because all the hits are on it.
Yeah.
No opener.
Okay.
I think it's like $160 pavilion seat in Tinley. Right.
$160.
I don't
think
those prices are going to hold on the secondary market. By the way,
oh man!
But they,
did
I mean,
they play Sometimes Salvation?
I don't think they did
because that's my favorite. That's my favorite.
They
Black
did.
Girl, so.
They did a bunch off that first album. But not in full like they're doing this summer.
Sometimes Salvation is not on the first album,
right?
But they did a whole bunch off the first album. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah. That was the bulk of the set.
Well, it's good to hear. I mean, and they didn't punch each other in the face during the show at all.
They didn't. There was very little interaction. Between them.
Yeah.
At one point, Chris looks over at Rich and goes, do you want to say something? Because Rich had not said a single word all night. And Rich, he's backed up from the microphone, he gets right on and goes, "Hi, everyone." And Chris goes, I said, do you want to say anything, not something? And Rich at least chuckled and went right back to not talking
just
the entire
night. Being stoic and not looking at him. Yeah, I never thought I'd see the day with those two guys getting back together after. I mean, because the stories about the conflict between those guys are pretty legendary.
I mean, supposedly Chris apologized for his role in that, which I think was probably the main role in that.
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll see if they make it through the summer tour, and we'll. I mean, I guess the bigger question is: do they continue to function in the future as a creative entity, or that'll really tell us if this was a cash grab, right? If anything new comes out of it, or are they just going to milk the first album?
I saw Black Crowes. Man, I'm trying to remember what year I saw the Black Crowes. Like 90, maybe.
Okay,
90, 91. They were great.
Yeah, that's. I saw them, maybe like. On that same tour with the Brotherly Love tour, when they were touring for that Lions album, I saw them like three times. I saw them in Milwaukee at the Rave. I saw them at the Aragon. This was still when he was married to Kate Hudson, too, because we were up in the balcony on the right side at Aragon, and we could see Kate Hudson sitting at the soundboard. But they were so great on that tour. I mean, it's always been one of those things. If they can if they can coexist, the music's never been in question.
Yeah. You ever see Black Crowes, Tom?
No, and I've only listened to precisely one Black Crowes album.
Which one?
Live at the Greek Theater with Jimmy Page.
Oh, with Jimmy Page, sure. Oh, that's fantastic.
I've had almost zero desire to listen to anything else they've done, not because I think they're untalented, but just the reputation makes me not want to listen to them.
I understand.
Yeah.
Even though I know that's fair. Good. You know, I've heard they did that show on, they did their performance on Stern. That was really well received.
They were good, yeah.
It was very good to watch, but I was just like, I'm probably not going to start listening to the Black Crowes now.
See, I love the Black Crowes.
Me too.
I love them. You know, speaking of Stern, did you see that Harry Styles performance of Sledgehammer?
No, but I heard it. Someone played it for me this week.
It's unbelievable.
Remarkable.
It's unbelievable.
My brother's wife was playing me a bunch of Harry Styles stuff over the week. She played me that Sledgehammer cover. She's like, "Who do you think this is?" And I'm like, "I have no idea." And then she started playing me more songs. I'm like, "Seriously, who is it?" She's like, "Harry Styles."
Harry Styles.
I was like, "Wow, okay."
No, that Sledgehammer cover
was good.
It's
yeah,
amazing.
Not without talent there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, listen, he was a host and musical guest on Saturday Night Live, did a fantastic job.
By the way, since Tom mentioned the Black Crowes and Jimmy Page, there's a fantastic story you should Google, Tom, on Rich alienating Jimmy Page, and that's why that partnership was so short.
Right.
Usually it's Chris, but in this circumstance, it was Rich.
But it was, yeah, no, I think you told this story.
I can't, I'm trying to remember it. I think he just blew him off.
Like, he blew off Jimmy.
He didn't want to make
Jimmy Page.
And Page apparently just was livid.
You don't blow off Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
You don't.
I know.
Especially if you're not even Chris Robinson.
Rich could have learned a thing or two from Jimmy Page.
Are you kidding?
According to the drummer's recollection, Page told him that he offered to write songs with the Robinson Brothers for their next record, but Rich blew him off with a, no thanks, we don't need more songs.
We're good. Thanks, Jimbo. All right.
No thanks, Jimmy Page.
We got this. That no, train is going.
No thanks, writer of Stairway to Heaven. We don't need your help.
That train's going totally off the tracks, but we don't need the creative spark. We're okay. There were a ton of stories. That's from the original drummer Steve Gorman's book, and he's been lighting them up at every chance.
Oh yeah,
as they've launched this comeback.
Yeah,
because he's not in it.
He's not in it, so he's going
right.
off. On,
he's going.
He's going off on the brothers. Uh-huh. That's pretty funny. That's funny. No thanks, Jimmy.
We're good.
We don't need any more songs. We'll call you if we need something. Jimmy Page. you just want to go, do you know that's Jimmy Page that you just said that to? Oh, boy. All right. Jim Ryan is here, music and entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. RadioJimRyan.com is the website. More music talk and more talk here. We got some music trivia. You're going to play Rock of Ages here as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and no one knows you'll be there. Holding hands, making all kinds of plans.
While the Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a Tuesday morning. We're here until 4 o'clock. We have some classic stand-up that we always take from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, and you can watch The Johnny Carson Show on Antenna TV, and I highly recommend it. We're going to be playing back some classic stand-up from David Brenner from 1983. We have a story here that maintains that Michael Bolton auditioned to be in Black Sabbath. Max von Sydow passed away. He was 90 years old, and we'll remember him and talk about his best roles. Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, and Chicago Now, likes to hang out with Jim. You can follow him at Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. And Jimmy, you've gone to some shows?
I have.
We like to talk about that?
Yes.
What about 10,000 Maniacs at City Winery?
I just love that they're still around. Their new singer is wonderful, too. I mean, Natalie Merchant's not there, obviously.
Yeah.
But it was great. I mean, they're one of those bands, too. That's the first time I had seen them, actually, at City Winery. And I forgot how many songs you know from 10,000 Maniacs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they had so many hits, late 80s, 90s there. It was great.
And so when did Natalie Merchant, did she drop
it
out?
When was the Unplugged? I feel like it was shortly after the Unplugged. Was that like maybe 95-ish, the Unplugged?
It would be, Unplugged was almost all the Unplugs were probably in the mid-90s.
I think it was right after that, I believe. So I think her first album, The one with the Carnival was the single.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of that album? I don't remember. But I think that was like 97.
Now, have they had the same singer?
I believe so. Yeah, I think she's been there for a while, and she plays violin too on all of the songs. Mm. So it was quite wonderful. I mean, you hear a song they did Because of the Night, their cover of Because of the Night,
right?
And it just made me think how a great song is a great song no matter how you hear it or who's doing it, right? Because the Patti Smith version is amazing,
yeah,
and the Springsteen version is amazing, and the 10,000 Maniacs version is amazing, regardless of who's singing it.
Yeah.
But they were fantastic. They did some weird covers, too. They covered Bob Marley. They covered The Cure.
They covered The Cure?
10,000 Maniacs covering The Cure.
What song did they do?
Throwing some violin on Friday I'm in Love.
Wow.
Oh, actually, here's my favorite story about that concert,
okay,
actually.
All right. Your favorite story about the 10,000 Maniacs concert, okay.
This was during the NBA All-Star weekend.
Oh, okay.
So everything in the West Loop was insane. There was hosting a private party of some right. sort for All-Star weekend, and
right.
City Winery was hosting one, too. Their restaurant and their bar area
in the front
was closed in the front
right.
for this, whatever this private party was. And as I walk in and back toward the venue, you can see that it's clearly some All-Star thing, because you could see basketballs and whatnot hanging,
yeah.
hanging in there. And this event hadn't started yet. This show was early, by the way. It was like a 5 o'clock start.
For the 10,000 Maniacs.
Yeah, they did two or three shows that night, and I was there for the early one. So mm-hmm. this NBA thing hadn't started yet. And I'm standing, I had a standing room only seat because it was sold out. So I'm standing right inside the door in that hallway, kind of watching.
Yeah.
As the door opens during a cover of Could You Be Loved by Bob Marley.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever that door opens, I just kind of instinctually look over. And I look over, and it's Horace Grant standing there.
Wow.
He has clearly walked into the venue accidentally instead of making a right and going into the bar area
yeah.
for whatever
the NBA
thing
yeah.
was. And Horace Grant looked so confused by what was happening on that stage. Violin on a Bob Marley cover. And he kind of looks over at me. I kind of give him I just kind of shrug
yeah.
my shoulders.
Yeah.
And he turns around and walks right back out. And he did not come back.
Oh, that's funny, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, Horace Grant did not appreciate the violin and the Bob Marley.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
That was pretty good.
Horace Grant. Remember Horace Grant? Remember those days?
Yes, when the Bulls were a thing.
Yeah.
Are they still a thing? I don't think they're a thing.
No, they're not.
They're not really a thing.
No.
They're something.
They're something. Yeah, but they're not a thing. They're not a thing
right.
anymore. But yeah, that's pretty funny. Horace Grant. Just randomly, you turn over and look, and it's Horace Grant.
I hope that he was just thinking to himself, as all these people are seated for a cover of Bob Marley by 10,000 Maniacs, is this the All-Star Game event? What is this? Am I late?
What's going on? Is this the entertainment for the All-Star weekend?
10,000
Maniacs. 10,000 Maniacs doing a cover of Bob Marley.
It's like, somebody get Horace back here. They're covering The Cure.
Yeah. All right. Jim Ryan is here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio show continues right here on 720 WGN. Beginning of Sharky's Machine, man. Great Burt Reynolds movie. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Tuesday morning, here till 4 o'clock. Jim Ryan, music and entertainment writer for Forbes, Daily Herald, and Chicago Now, is here, joining us once a month, and wrote about a bunch of really cool things. And you also spent a Valentine's Day with Soul Asylum and Local H.
Nothing says love like
at the Soul Asylum and Local H.
Love was in the air
at the Metro.
Yes,
that must have been pretty cool.
Soul Asylum's one of my favorite bands, and Local H might be the most underrated band in out of the 90s.
Yeah,
everybody credits Jack White for the rock duo thing, and it's
no
bollocks.
Yeah,
Scott Lucas.
Yep, Scott Lucas. Yep.
But
I'm friends with Scott, so I joke around sometimes. And just, man, get a bass player.
he's a one man band.
I know. So, well, how was it?
Fantastic. You know, the Local H is. They're one of those bands I've never seen even a mediocre Local H show.
Yeah,
I don't think he's capable of phoning it in at any time.
Yeah.
And Soul Asylum, you know, they've got a bunch of they're still kind of plugging along. Dave Pirner's the last remaining original member at mm-hmm. this point, but his drummer's fantastic. It's his name's Michael Bland. He played with Prince for a long time.
It's wow,
that whole Minneapolis connection going on there.
Wow.
So it's the rhythm section is solid, and then you know Dave Pirner seemed to be imbibing quite a bit out of a Red Solo cup, but it was still it was still good.
I'm trying to remember. I saw Soul Asylum. They opened. I can't remember who they opened for, but they were the opening act for a band, and I can't remember.
Where was it at?
Metro.
Okay.
And Riv.
Okay.
And they were great.
Yeah, that's they're one of those bands that I think is criminally underrated because people know one song.
Yeah.
And people judge them based they expect to hear 90 minutes of Runaway Train, and
yeah,
it couldn't be further from that. In
well,
a good way.
You know, I did a play years ago that I co-wrote and directed. It was an adaptation of High Fidelity, and it was called The Vinyl Shop.
Okay.
We changed a lot of it. I mean, it was the basic, you know, it was the basic structure of High Fidelity, but all the stories that were in there were from my past relationships and stuff like that. So during a rehearsal one night, I made, you know, 800 references in it to Buffalo Tom.
I'm shocked.
So there were a bunch of Buffalo Tom references and talk about Buffalo Tom and stuff. And at one point, Matt O'Neill, who played played the role that
Jack Black right.
played in the movie. He comes up from the back room, goes behind the counter as a girl is buying a bootleg of Buffalo Tom.
Okay.
And he grabs the Buffalo Tom, he looks at it, and Rob, who you know the main character, is ringing this woman up behind the counter, and he comes out and he goes, "Oh, Buffalo Tom, huh? Somebody besides you guys, somebody besides you likes these guys?" And, he says to Rob. And then the girl who's buying the CD says, "Yeah, just be nice. They just broke up." Because at that time they were on hiatus.
Okay.
When we did the play. He said, "Just broke up." And Matt improvised this during a rehearsal. And he said, "That's because they realized they're Soul Asylum." That he improvised it. And you know, and of course, I bust out laughing like, "You jerk." And I was like, "That's a keeper."
That's great.
So as the keeper. So we have a DVD of The Vinyl Shop that we recorded it one performance just for posterity.
Sure.
So I had Bill Janovitz, who is the lead singer, you know, from Buffalo Tom. He agreed to compose some music for a play that I did.
Okay.
Called Here Comes a Regular.
A Replacements reference there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And we used Bill covered Here Comes a Regular.
Wow.
And we used it
that's amazing.
In the play. So anyway, he did all original music, a score for Here Comes a Regular, and I was blown away because it's Bill Janovitz.
Yeah, that's insane.
It completely. So in order for him to get a feel for what Here Comes a Regular was going to be like, I sent him a copy of Vinyl Shop because it was going to be similar to that kind of vibe.
Sure.
So I sent him a copy of Vinyl Shop, completely forgetting
That line is in there.
And so he emails me back, "Soul Asylum, huh?" And I was like, and I had just like, "No, that my actor improvised that." And he's like, "Yeah, right." So, but I was just, I completely forgot the joke was in there. And I was like, "Oh, man." But I like Soul Asylum. I do too.
Yeah, they're definitely like the redheaded. I mean, that joke is apt because they're the redheaded stepchild of the Minneapolis scene, right? Everyone says they're not the Replacements and they're not Husker Du.
Right.
Well, yeah, you're correct, but that doesn't mean they're bad.
Exactly. What about the Lumineers?
So, where are you on the Lumineers? That's where I was at. And I got to say, that was a fantastic show.
It was.
I've seen them a couple times and was pretty unimpressed. They've figured out how to perform in front of these giant crowds now.
They opened for U2, I think.
Yeah, on the Joshua Tree Tour.
I saw them open for U2. Yeah.
At Soldier Field.
Yeah.
I think they learned a thing or two on that tour, because this stage setup that they employed over two nights at Allstate Arena, by the way, two sold-out nights.
Wow.
That's crazy, right? There's not a lot of bands that are doing capable of that at
this
point.
That's shocking.
That was why I wanted to go. I'm like, I can't believe that this is this big of a deal.
Yeah.
The stage setup they had reminded me a lot of the stage set that U2 employed on the Elevation tour and on the tour after that, where it's kind of the ramp runway.
That's, Vertigo?
That's, yeah, the right where it starts at the stage and kind of comes out to a point in the middle of the floor.
Yeah.
That was what they had, was that runway system. So people in the middle of that, in front of the stage, and then they moved around constantly from those ramps. The drummer had a drum kit set up on that ramp. The keyboardist came out and did a Bono-like sprint the whole way around and back to the stage. They figured out how to perform.
The Lumineers?
Yes. Because they were so boring to me at Soldier Field. I think they learned a thing or two from U2.
I guess. Wow.
Because I was like, Bono literally does that in the Elevation DVD where he takes the sprint around the whole thing.
Yeah.
The stage, that's what it looked like. As soon as we walked in, I'm like, that looks like the Elevation stage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they learned a thing or two, certainly how to perform in front of a larger crowd. I couldn't believe that night when I walked into Soldier Field for the Joshua Tree tour and the Lumineers were on that it was full. I've never seen an opening act fill a giant place like that. And Soldier Field was almost full for the Lumineers. I couldn't believe that with the sun still up.
Yeah.
That shocked me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just can't believe that they're selling out.
I know. Trust me.
Allstate Arena for two nights.
That was the whole reason I wanted to go. I'm like,
so crazy.
But so it's one of the hottest tours here of the late winter, early spring. And they've got dates scheduled into like June. It's an insane tour. They're doing Red Rocks and they're doing all these.
So they're doing big places.
Yeah, they're doing big places, all multi-night stands, like I think at Barclays in New York. They're doing a couple nights at a stadium in Toronto. Like, it wasn't just here.
Wow. That's I don't know why I'm so surprised.
No, I was too. That was,
I mean,
I
wow.
wanted to go see what was up with it.
It's the Lumineers, man.
A big deal.
All right. What about this, the art exhibition?
Scott Avett.
Scott Avett, yeah.
He's an interesting guy. So Scott Avett of the Avett Brothers.
Yeah.
Has this art installation that I think is just wrapping up this week in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he grew up, and a lot of this art is kind of inspired by what he sees on the road. A lot of it was created on the road. It starts with some illustrations, some journaling in yellow legal pads.
Yeah.
And then turns into full-fledged paintings, and all of that is on display in this exhibit. So it was cool. It was what we talked about was the way the worlds of music and art intertwine, the way that music and art function kind of, again, we almost got into this a little bit with C2E2 earlier, but the way music and art kind of help people to accept things that are different historically.
Yeah.
He talked about growing up in rural North Carolina as a Culture Club fan and saying, I see Boy George, who is this strange, right?
Yeah.
You know, guy making it totally okay to be strange in the mid-80s in a place where that wasn't going to be accepted otherwise. And,
right.
So we kind of talked about that role of music, that role of art, and how all of it kind of informs this current exhibition. And it's not his first one. This is kind of his thing outside music. And they're another one. They've got an insane tour mounted, I think, into like August.
And that's
so a ton of dates for them.
So did they play any place here?
They haven't been through Chicago yet, which makes me wonder if we're going to find them on a festival bill here soon.
Yeah.
Because that's always kind of a glaring omission when there's a huge tour like that with no Chicago date.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
That is strange. Is there anything coming up that you're looking forward to?
What do we have coming up?
Anything?
Yes. Sinead O'Connor.
Right. Sinead.
Sinead O'Connor at City Winery next week.
And that's on St. Patrick's Day, right?
That's St. Patrick's Day week. I think it's like there's three or four shows leading up to St. Patrick's Day.
Wow.
And that's going to be wonderful.
If you've never seen her, right?
I've never seen her. I'm very excited.
She's great, man.
I got to do that. You know who else is at City Winery next week? Is Alejandro Escovedo.
Oh, okay.
And I've never seen him either. And he's one of those guys who I've known about forever. I love all of the stuff. You know, he's been involved with Peter Buck from REM, and he's done so many different things. He's done punk rock. He's done this kind of roots Americana stuff in his current album. A lot of it is it kind of varies between Spanish language and English, and he's backed by an Italian rock group called Don Antonio.
What?
Yeah. So that's what's going on at City Winery, is that that's what they're touring in support of.
That's unusual.
It's a concept album about two characters named Diego and Salvo. One comes from Italy, one comes from Mexico, to chase their music dream in America and kind of what they encounter along the way.
That sounds cool.
So it's an interesting concept album, and
all right,
Alejandro's quite passionate.
Well, looking forward to that. All right, Jim, we're going to play a round of Rock of Ages, man. Are you ready?
Probably not, but
okay.
Sure.
It's a music trivia game that we play. Tom, Jim, and myself play against each other, and whoever has the most questions right wins a Buick. So that's what happens. All right, we'll play a round of Rock of Ages right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 4 o'clock. Coming up, we're going to be talking about Max von Sydow, a tremendous actor, passed away at the age of 90. Was in some great movies, a legendary actor. We play classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can watch on Antenna TV. We're going to play back some stand-up from the great David Brenner from 1983. We've got much more to talk about. We're going to talk about best lineup changes in music as well, and Michael Bolton tried out for Sabbath. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Tech. Text, you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Jim Ryan is with us for his monthly visit. We talked about some concerts and some other stuff, that C2E2 and all kinds of cool stuff. But we always play a round of Rock of Ages. And this is a music trivia game, where we ask each other questions, and whoever gets the questions right, obviously, wins. So I ask Jim. Jim asks Tom, and Tom asks me questions and for Rock of Ages. Are we ready for another round of Rock of Ages?
I'm ready, okay. I think.
All right.
I always say I'm ready, but...
So my category is 50s, 60s. 50s, 60s. Within one, what year was Patsy Cline born?
Oh, God.
Within one.
Within one.
Yeah, within one year, what year was Patsy
Cline?
Yeah.
I know Patsy Cline's no longer with us.
Nope.
So I'm going to go... Mm. 1936.
Oh, she was born in 32.
Ah,
that was close though.
Tried. It was close. A good effort.
It was a good effort. All right, Jim, you're asking Tom.
Tom, you've got some of these questions as well. I apologize in advance.
Thanks a lot.
50s, 60s. Within one, what year was Smokey Robinson born? He just had a birthday, by the way.
I know. That's the tough part. I can't remember how old he is though.
Yeah, he did just have a birthday, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and a significant one, if I'm
not
mistaken.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay.
I think it's 1940, but I'm not, let's see here.
It's 1940.
It is 1940.
Just, oh, okay. He just turned 80.
Turned 80,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Tom.
All right. Well, all right. At least I was in the right decade.
You were there. You were right there.
Yeah,
team
I've done worse.
Yeah.
I've done worse. Oh. All right, Nick.
Yes.
50s, 60s.
Uh-huh.
What did they call the old high school dances that required shoe removal as to not scuff up the gym floor?
Sock hops.
That is correct. Sock hop.
What kind of question is that?
A question about the 50s and 60s. Don't you remember, Nick?
All right. I'm winning.
Yeah. Look at you.
Look at that, huh? All right. 70s, 80s. You ready? When a circus mishap occurs, the clowns are called out to distract the audience. What big 70s hit derived its title from this practice?
I have no idea.
When a circus mishap occurs, the clowns are called out to distract the audience. What big 70s hit derived its title from this practice?
I don't know. Does it have something about a barrel in the title? I have no idea. No. Do you know this? Yeah. You do know this.
I do.
What is it?
Send in the clowns.
Oh, okay.
Judy Collins.
Hmm. Well, there you go.
Do you not know that song?
I know the song now, yeah. But yeah.
Okay. Dom, you know that song?
I do not. I do not.
Very dramatic ballad.
Yes.
Send in the clowns.
I just have the vision of the clown diving into the barrel to try to get out of the way of a bull.
Oh, you're talking at a bullfight.
Wait, what was it?
Was
it
a circus? Rodeo?
Oh, a circus. Yeah, I should pay more attention.
Yeah, you should pay more attention when I'm reading the questions.
Send in the clowns.
Yeah, there it is.
The clown is here.
Yep. All right. I think
Tom,
it's you.
Another one of these. Within one, what year was Elvis Costello born? 70s, 80s?
Within one.
Within 1 year. What year was Elvis Costello born?
The Angry Young Man.
Yeah. I'm going to say, I know this might sound stupid, 52.
You're close, 54.
Ah, okay. Because I knew he was around my dad's age.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Nick.
What happened?
70s and 80s.
Yeah.
What flowering shrub is mentioned in the chorus of Seals and Crofts' song Summer Breeze?
I'm trying to go through the lyrics in my mind here.
Makes me feel fine.
Tom, what was the question again? It was which?
What flowering shrub?
Flowering shrub.
Flowering shrub.
Jasmine.
Yeah. Correct. Wow.
Look at you. There you go. Attaboy.
See, this is, it pays to enjoy Yacht Rock.
Yes, it does.
Oh, good for you.
Christian Bale. All right, after this, I have two. You guys have zero. All right, ready for another one?
It sounds like it's debatable, but yes.
90s, 2000s.
Yes.
In 97, singer Paula Cole asked, "Where have all the blanks gone?"
This goes back to my rodeo thing.
Yeah,
cowboys.
Exactly right.
On the board.
Yeah, on the board.
All right.
God, that is so 97.
Yeah, that is.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that is.
All right.
Tom, within one.
Oh, God.
What year was Eminem born? I think I would have gotten this.
I'm trying to place his age.
Yeah.
Because he really broke out in 99. I'm going to say 84.
I'm sorry. You're way off in that one. 74. Yeah.
74. Okay. Yeah. I thought he was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would have gotten that one.
Yeah. All right, Nick.
What happened?
Here's a real lob of a pitch here. What music icon played the character Chef on TV's irreverent show South Park?
Come on, man. Isaac
Hayes.
Yeah,
this one is really lobbed up there.
Isaac Hayes.
Yeah. Mm.
Wonderful.
That's a mulligan.
Yeah.
That's a gimme.
That was a good one.
Real, brain buster there.
Okay, you ready, Jim?
Sure.
Beatles or Elvis? Come on, man.
See, you say this, and these are the ones I get wrong, but go ahead.
Which Beatles song is subtitled She's So Heavy? Come on, man.
Are you serious?
The Weight? I don't know. What? Which one?
The Weight?
Which one?
The Weight. That's by the band.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Which one?
I Want You.
I Want You.
Oh, yeah.
I Want You So bad.
Yeah.
Man, see? God.
Jim.
I know. We play this game, and then I sound like an idiot every week. My appearances go real well
until the last segment when we do this. Okay.
Here, Tom, I got a Beatles and Elvis question for you.
Okay.
Fill in this Beatles title. Blank a hole. blank.
Come on, man.
A hole.
Oh, fixing a hole.
There you go.
I was like, I was thinking of dig a pony for some reason. I was like, dig a hole. I don't remember that.
I feel like that audio is coming back to haunt me at some point, but yes. Blank a hole. Fixing a hole.
All right. So, Tom, you got one. Here we go.
All right. Beatles and Elvis.
Yeah, man.
What Beatles song from 1967 features a Paul McCartney solo on the recorder? You know, the plastic flute you might have played in elementary school.
We're really tearing it down today.
Why am I blanking on this?
Mm-hmm.
What, 67?
Yeah, 1967.
All right. So it's on the White Album.
I'm glad it's not just me.
No, I can't.
Are you smelling burning toast right now? Are you all right?
I'm trying to think of a recorder solo on a.
Yeah, it's not coming to me on the White Album either. But
I mean, if it's 67, it's a White
Album. It'll be the White Album.
Yeah. Revolution number 9.
We don't mention that song. Don't do it. The Fool on the Hill.
Oh, sure.
Magical Mystery Tour.
That's on Magical Mystery Tour, by the way. So I was wrong.
The Plastic Flute.
Okay. All right. Well, after the first round. I have 3. Jim has 1. Tom has 1.
It's a real barn burner.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
It is. Let's take a break, and then we'll play round 2. Jim Ryan is here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Another round of Rock of Ages coming up right here on 720 WGN. Great Walter Hill movie, Streets of Fire.
Is that Eric Carmen?
No, it's Dan Hartman.
Dan Hartman. Oh, God. Okay.
Dan Hartman. sang by in the movie, by an African-American group of 4 guys, one of them being Robert Townsend.
Okay.
Yeah, the Sorrells.
Yeah, is that what they were called?
Yeah, I watched it this weekend.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's great. Willem Dafoe, man. First time I ever saw Willem Dafoe was in that movie. Yeah. Michael Paré. What happened to Michael Paré?
We know what happened to Michael Paré.
Yeah, we know what happened to Michael Paré. I've told that story on the air before. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Jim Ryan is our guest. Tom Hush is the producer. We're playing a game of Rock of Ages, which is a music trivia game. And also the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. It is. I have 3. Jim has 1. Tom has 1. Are we ready for round 2 of Rock of Ages?
The Buick is warming in the construction
zone. Exactly right. 50s, 60s, you ready?
Yeah.
What concept band did Georgia blues artists Floyd Council and Pink Anderson inspire?
The beginning of that one more time? What?
What concept band did Georgia blues artists Floyd Council and Pink Anderson inspire?
I mean, it's obviously not the Monkees, but I can't really think of too many other ones right at the moment. The Monkees.
No.
What was it?
The guys' names are Floyd and Pink.
Well, yeah, okay.
So it's Pink Floyd.
Oh, Jesus, my God. Wow. See, I really got to pay more attention to these questions.
Yeah.
I think I felt the air of that one missing you over there.
Yeah, that went right over.
Okay.
Wow.
All right, Jim.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Okay. moving along. Tom, what 1961 movie contains these 3 song titles? Jet Song, Maria, and I Feel Pretty.
Hmm.
Do you know it, Tom?
Oh, you know, is that a Sondheim? I think it's West Side Story.
It is West Side Story.
Come on, man.
Come on, yeah. That one wouldn't have gone over my head. I knew that one.
All right.
I don't know, Spielberg is remaking that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Sorry?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
He's remaking it. He's never, you know, he's never made a musical.
Okay.
And I've often wondered why, especially because of the Jitterbug scene, the Jitterbug dance contest scene in 1941. Because that's it's an incredible scene, and it's all music. And I've ever since that scene in 1979 when that movie came out, I was like, why hasn't Spielberg made a musical?
Wow.
So you go back and watch that Jitterbug dance scene in 1941. It's one of the best sequences he's ever filmed. It's so good. Okay.
All right, 50-60s.
Yeah.
What folk classic popularized by the Kingston Trio was based on the 1866 murder of a girl named Laura Foster?
What?
What folk classic popularized by the Kingston Trio, was based on the 1866 murder of a girl named Laura Foster?
Wow. I don't know if I had a hammer.
No, Tom Dooley.
Tom Dooley. I was actually going to be my guest. Yeah.
Of course. What a dummy I am.
It's going around today, Nick.
Yeah.
Something in the water.
All right. So it's 3-1-1. Correct? Or did you get?
No, he just got one there.
He got
West Side Story.
Oh, West Side Story. Yeah, that's right. It was such an easy question. I just forgot about it.
He's trying to cheat you, Tom.
No,
okay.
I don't like that.
All right. You ready?
Sure.
70s, 80s. Name the artist or his 73 song that has characters named Sloppy Sue, Jack the Rabbit, and Big Boss Billy.
I mean, I know these.
Wait a minute. You should know this.
I know. I do know it. I can't think of it.
Name the artist or his 73 song that has the characters named Sloppy Sue, Jack the Rabbit, and Big Bones Billy. You're gonna slap yourself in the face.
Go. What is it?
Springsteen. Rosalita.
I love that song too.
Yeah, I know you do. All right. Okay.
Jim. Having an off night.
Having a rough go of it this morning. Okay.
He's got the yips.
Yeah. Tom, what 72 movie contains these three soundtrack titles? Dueling Banjos, Riding the Waves, Please. And Shucking the Corn.
I'll take Deliverance.
Very good, Tom.
Yeah.
Wow. We're tied up now.
Here we go. This is the comeback of the century.
All right,
70s and 80s.
Yeah.
What role did Michael Jackson play in the Wizard of Oz remake flick, The Wiz?
He was the Cowardly Lion.
That is incorrect.
Yeah, he's the Tin Man, I believe, isn't
no,
he?
No,
he's
the Scarecrow. Nipsey Russell. He's the Scarecrow.
Scarecrow.
Oh, the Cowardly Lion. Yeah, that's right. It's the Tin Man is Nipsey Russell.
Okay.
Okay, I forgot. I don't know. That movie sucks.
I'm just going to stop talking at this point.
Okay, you ready?
Whatever.
90s, 2000s. In Wayne's World 2...
Oh, good. All right.
What deceased rock god led Wayne and Garth on the path to fulfill their destiny?
Jim Morrison.
You got it!
Finally.
You got it.
You ask me more Wayne's World questions, I'm right back in this
thing. Okay, all right. Well, there it is. Nice job. It's
Thanks.
I got three. Tom has three. You have two. You're coming back, man.
I don't know how.
All right.
Tom, mm-hmm. What 1995 movie contains these three soundtrack titles? Mm-hmm. One Small Step, Spirit in the Sky, and Houston, We Have a Problem.
I'm going to say Apollo 13.
Very good.
Yeah.
Starring Lieutenant Dan.
Yep. All right. There you go. You took the lead, Tom.
Nice.
Lobbing Tom softballs tonight.
Yep.
Well, after an entire card of absolute, I can't the do the birthdays. One. I just can't.
The first one was rough.
That's a rough one. All right. 90s, 2000s. For what 2004 movie sequel did the Counting Crows receive an Oscar nomination for their song Accidentally in Love?
Oh, I actually know this one.
Mm-hmm.
2004? 2004. See, I don't follow Counting Crows.
I think when you hear it, you'll be like, oh, yeah.
What's the name of the song?
Accidentally in Love. 2004. Hermetically sealed.
Yeah, thank you, Ed McMahon. 2004. I don't know. Sideways.
Shrek.
Shrek 2, specifically.
Oh, Shrek 2?
Yeah.
Not in a million years would I have gotten that.
That's all right.
All right. Okay.
Oh, God. All right.
Tom's got the lead, man. Best I can do is tie.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about
it. Or lose.
Yeah. I'm going to lose.
All right. Beatles and Elvis. Fill in the title of this Elvis seasonal recording. See if... This Elvis seasonal recording. Blank, bring my baby back to me.
Christmas? Bring my baby back to me? No. So, I don't know. I don't know Elvis.
Santa.
Okay. Of course, Santa. Great. Are we done here?
You are.
I was done a while ago.
All right. Tom?
Yeah,
you could win it here.
Yeah, this is the noose right here.
If you get this one right, you could win it. If not, I could tie.
Please, for the love of God, be a Beatles question.
All right.
Tom, we got an Elvis question for you.
Oh, okay.
In 1958, the Three Teens recorded Dear 533-10761 in honor of Elvis. What did these numbers represent? Think about it.
Can you give me the numbers again?
Yeah. 533-10761. Don't overthink it.
And what year was that recorded?
58. By the Three Teens. What did those numbers represent?
His phone number. I don't know.
No, it's his Army serial number.
Don't overthink it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right. I can tie it here.
This could be it.
This is it.
All right. Beatles and Elvis.
Yeah, man.
What was the last name of the big band brothers Jimmy and Tommy, whose TV series stage show featured Elvis in his fifth televised appearance? What was Jimmy and Tommy's last name, the big band brothers whose TV series stage show featured Elvis in his fifth televised appearance?
Dorsey.
Correct.
Oh.
Wow.
Nicely done, Nick.
Wow, it's a tie.
Have there been three consecutive ties?
I don't know.
No, I think there might have been a winner last time.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But we've had a lot of ties.
Yeah, we've had...
The Buick's going to need an oil change if we're going three straight ties.
Yeah. Well, we could just chainsaw it in half and split it. So, looking forward to, again, one more time, you're going to see Sinead?
Sinead and I think Alejandro Escovedo, I think both this week.
Mm-hmm. Anything, you're going to post something about what's being posted later.
I've got a bunch of stuff. AEW is today, and Ric Flair is going to be later this week.
Ric Flair, did you interview Ric Flair?
I did.
You interviewed Ric Flair?
In person on Friday.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, we got to talk about Ric Flair next time.
Oh, man.
Yeah. 72. He was at the World of Wheels in Rosemont.
Am I green? Oh.
Yeah.
Woo!
It was fantastic.
I can imagine.
I don't get starstruck with these too much anymore.
Ric Flair
walks into the room. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's all over.
Yep.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about that.
It was good.
Okay. Jim Ryan, thanks, boy. All right. Nick DiGilio show continues. We got the news coming up.